Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Team Called Palace podcast with me, Ben Watts, with him, Matt Watts. We first of all just want to congratulate Crystal Palace women on successfully lifting the WSL Championship. More on them later, but we're going to start off this pod talking about Palace's results in the Premier League against Fulham and Newcastle. And, well, overall, it's been a pretty successful week for the football club, Matt.
Yeah, it has. As you said, massive congratulations to Palace women. The men's side have also done pretty well. Obviously, 3 points in the week against Newcastle and then another point against Fulham on Saturday. When we previewed it on the last pod, I said that 4 points would be a pretty good return. So, yeah, on the whole, really, really pleased.
Yeah, if we start off with Fulham, I guess in isolation, you could look at that one and say a point, not too bad. Might have liked all three, but I guess off the back of the previous form that we have had to continue that unbeaten run, okay, we couldn't make it 4 wins in a row, but that would be just playing greedy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. And I think there are a couple of caveats with this one because obviously Abir Eze missed the game. I think he actually said that he could play, but Oliver Glasner chose not to risk him, which I think was the right call. And of course, the fact that it was our third game in 6 days, Fulham didn't have a game in midweek, so I think there was a massive advantage for them in that respect. But yeah, listen, we started the game really, really well. We could have easily been a couple of goals up before Fulham really got going. Obviously, we fell behind, but we still managed to get something out of it, thanks to a pretty special strike from Jeffrey Schlupp.
Yeah, we're back to Worldies FC again. I mean, from certain players, you might expect it, but where's that come from, Schluppy?
I don't know, to be honest with you, but it is an absolute rocket. As you said, back to we only score bangers FC because it is a fantastic strike. I think Tony Gale's summary on the commentary of absolutely whack was quite funny, but also quite spot on because it is just a phenomenal strike. He hits it so cleanly, and I've watched the slow-mo version, and to be honest with you, it's not particularly slow because he just hits it so well. And of course, the fact that it clips the post before going in just makes it look even better. But yeah, a phenomenal strike. And also a shout out to Adam Wharton for the assist because it's a wonderful pass. I don't know how he manages to see Jeffrey Schlupp with the referee in the way, but yeah, a fantastic ball and then a simply exquisite finish from Schlupp.
I did actually sit through the entirety of Match of the Day only for us to be on last. Shock. But Ian Wright did squeeze in before the end of the programme a mini segment on how good Adam Wharton was, and boy, was he.
Yeah, he is unbelievably good, and he seems to be getting better and better. I think it's probably too late for him to get on the plane, but he must get an England call-up in the next year or so because he is playing incredibly well. And it wasn't just the assist for Jeffrey Schlupp's goal. There was one in the first half as well where he does something very similar. A delightful ball through to Michael Olise. Michael really should have done better. He should have hit the target. He should have put us 1-0 up. But listen, he's a fantastic player, both in possession and out of possession as well. He does so much excellent work out of possession, so he can definitely do both sides of it.
Just briefly going back to the Schlupp goal, wasn't there something about a shooting practice in training that maybe stirred the pot a bit motivation-wise for the midfielder?
Yeah, so apparently the youngsters beat the old boys in a shooting drill the day before in training, and Oliver Glasner made a comment that Schluppy might have been a bit angry about that, so he might have been even more motivated to score. The whole thing did make me laugh because it made me think about Roy Hodgson's team before lockdown. Oldies v youngsters in training. I think if you were below 30, you'd have been classed as a youngster, wouldn't you?
Yeah, the old guard. Remember when there was those pictures of them all going out and partying together? Looked like the golf boys had, you know, got lost on their way back to the 19th hole. But yeah, just back onto the game. Like you say, no Eze. So Olise was kind of the main man, if you will. And that opportunity that he missed, ultimately on his wrong foot, he stuck it the wrong side of the post. You know, the composure was there, just not quite the execution.
Yeah, I thought his first touch was really good, and then it was the right idea, it was the right place to try and put it, but he's put it the wrong side of the post. And you'd have to say, when it's someone who is as good as Michael Olise, you would expect him to score. So yeah, obviously that was disappointing. We were well on top in that first half an hour, and we really should have scored at least one. Obviously, that was frustrating because we didn't capitalise on it, but this is becoming a bit of a theme now. Palace starting games really well. Unfortunately, on Saturday, we just didn't manage to get anything to show for it.
And how would you analyse the Fulham goal? I thought it was a pretty decent header in the end from Rodrigo Muniz. Made a kind of clever run off the back of Nathaniel Clyne. Anything we could have done better to prevent it, do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, I need to apologise to Palace fans because I left Rob Muniz on my bench in fantasy football. And I said to my wife on Saturday morning, I bet he's going to score against us now. And lo and behold, he did. I think the other person to blame, apart from myself, though, is probably Tyrick Mitchell, because he gives the ball away in the build-up to the goal, and then he just doesn't get back in quick enough. Timothy Castagna manages to run off the back of him. He puts in a really good ball. As you said, it's a good header from Muniz, but yeah, it did feel a little bit avoidable. And I must admit, Fulham did come into the game towards the end of that first half. They started the second half pretty well too. But let's be honest, as a home side in the Premier League, I don't think they did a great deal. I don't really feel as though they created a lot. So yeah, it would have been very galling to lose the game. But thankfully, because of Jeff's absolutely whack, we didn't.
Anyone else you wanted to pick out from a Palace side of things who did impress you? We saw a bit more of a cameo from Edouard. He's obviously not played in recent weeks.
Yeah, and you'd have to say that Edouard probably had one of the best chances in the game less than a minute after coming on. He did really well initially. He's forced a decent low save from Bernd Leno, but for me, I'd like to see a bit more power. I'd like to see a bit more conviction. I think you might find if he'd been on the pitch for a bit longer or if he'd had a few more minutes in recent weeks, he might have stuck that away. Also, in the first half, there was a really good chance for Chris Richards. Now, Fulham also had a really good chance from a set piece, which Issa Diop headed over the bar. Chris Richards headed this one over the bar too. For me, both of them should be working the goalkeeper. So that was one of our other good chances. And then I think also in that first half, we need to mention the Daniel Munoz penalty shout. I've seen some people on social media saying they would have liked it. I don't know about you, but I think it might have been a little bit harsh.
I personally thought he dangled his leg to kind of initiate contact. So for me, it would have been a real soft one, particularly if we'd have conceded that, I wouldn't have been happy. So with that in mind, I think VAR was fully right not to overturn it. But like you say, I've seen other Palace fans that would suggest it was a stonewall pen.
Yeah, you see, for me, I think it comes in that category of I've seen them given. But as you say, I would be very disappointed if it was given against us, because I think he's almost waited to initiate the contact. It's almost like he's kind of held his leg back waiting for Robinson to touch it. So yeah, I can definitely see why it wasn't given. And as I said, if it was given against us, I wouldn't have been happy.
The former Premier League referee Keith Hackett was asked about it on Twitter, and he said there probably was contact, but the way he goes down would probably persuade the referee not to give it. It looked exaggerated. So yeah, what can we learn from that? Maybe should have been a foul, but because he got fouled and he didn't fall correctly, then we don't get the penalty. But yeah, there we go. It didn't quite look right, did it? But I guess overall, 1-1, we probably take that on the balance of play. Although we did have, as you say, more chances. I think they had a better XG overall.
Yeah, as I said, I do think we were the better side, but we didn't capitalise when we were on top. And ultimately, we went behind away from home in the Premier League. We mentioned the fact that it was our third game in 6 days, missing Eze. And I think when you are losing a game that late on, to get something out of it is a real result. So yeah, for me, happy with the point. I think also maybe it just kind of throws people off the scent a little bit, because ultimately, if we keep winning, then people will be sniffing around Glasner. The fans will have unrealistic expectations in the summer. So let's throw in the odd draw here and there.
Yeah, good point. We don't want to lose the magician, the second coming of Albus Dumbledore or Grindelwald or whatever. I know that's Switzerland and not Austria. But anyway, when he came in, he said he wasn't a magician. And after that game against Newcastle, I was thinking, I beg to differ, what has gone on to our team? Because obviously that was the third win on the bounce and it was another tremendous result.
Yeah, it was. And it was another fantastic performance. I think to back up the West Ham game with a performance like that was incredibly impressive. And I think this is a really important point to make, because against West Ham, a lot of people said, yeah, they've got a European hangover. They really weren't very good in that first half an hour, and we did blow them away. But then to back it up a few days later against Newcastle, and then obviously to go again and start the game really well against Fulham, I think that shows that there is a little bit more to us. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the Newcastle performance was outstanding. If you'd have said to me at the start of the season that we would outrun and outplay Eddie Howe's Newcastle, I would have been very, very surprised. And we did both of those things. I thought in the first half, we were excellent. There were quite a few times where we sustained attacks for quite a long period of time. And we just played with so much energy. I thought the two in the middle, Wharton and Hughes, were absolutely superb. They completely won that midfield battle. And listen, Newcastle had a couple of moments. Obviously, Bruno looked decent. There was a chance for Alexander Isak in that first half, but we were by far and away the better side. And we were just so dominant. And obviously, we went on to get the result. But even if we didn't go on to get the result, that is the sort of performance that I want to see from the Crystal Palace side.
Yeah, and when you talk about managers coming in and improving your team, or sometimes it's the opposite way around, actually, that fans will say, look, we need to change the manager. Who has he actually improved? So to kind of flip that around, what has Oliver Glasner done with Mateta? The guy has turned into Thierry Henry over the past week. I mean, another brace in this game against Newcastle, and he's even got Eze celebrating before he sticks the ball in the net. They're that confident he's going to score these days.
Yeah, and listen, this was an excellent goal. Obviously, it's not going to be anywhere near our goal of the season shortlist because we have scored so many bangers, but it's just a really well-worked goal. Once again, it comes from a forward pass into the feet of Jean-Philippe Mateta. He plays a lovely 1-2 with Jordan Ayew. You know, an excellent bounce pass from Ayew back to Mateta. The movement was superb. A really good finish. As you said, he is just playing with so much confidence right now. And I've said it a couple of times, I do think we do need to give some credit to Roy and Ray, because Mateta's hold-up play has improved so much this season, and that is definitely something that they worked on with him. But his all-round game, the confidence in front of goal, his running off the ball, as I mentioned, his hold-up play, absolutely fantastic. And you could see that the confidence was just flowing through him on Wednesday night.
Oliver Glasner mentioned something about it being reward for his hard work and all the sort of extra practice he's doing and getting coaches to come in early so he can do drills beforehand. And, you know, those little stories are nice to hear, that it is a, you know, a product of him, you know, really just trying to better himself.
Yeah, absolutely. That is something that you want to hear. You want to hear that the players at your football club are trying to be better, and he is absolutely doing that. So yeah, it sounds like he's working incredibly hard, both on the pitch and on the training ground.
And thoughts on his second goal?
Yeah, so once again, I really enjoyed the second goal because I think it's another really good bit of play. Obviously, that man, Jeff Schlupp, picks up the ball on the left. He plays inside to Will Hughes, who, as I said, I thought he had an outstanding game. He squares it to Mateta, and then Mateta sweeps it in. Obviously, it goes through the keeper's legs, but ultimately, he struck it well, hard and low. It's found the back of the net. Listen, I have to say, I absolutely loved the celebration for the second goal. Obviously, the first goal, he ran to the corner flag, he kicked it, he gave it the big boom. But the second goal, just the kind of the swagger, the walk, the strut in front of Holmesdale Block B, and then going over to the corner flag and just standing with it, I thought that was brilliant. And to be honest with you, it just epitomises the confidence that's running through him right now.
And I guess the confidence running through the team, and you mentioned swagger, Eze was just ridiculous, wasn't he, in the Newcastle game? I think at times they were trying to use four men to defend against him, and he was still dribbling it past them.
Yeah, he was excellent. I think for me, the only thing really missing from his performance was a goal, and he had a couple of chances. He also had a few openings where he just took a few too many touches. You're thinking, come on, Ebbs, get the shot away, but he didn't quite do it. But yeah, it was a fantastic performance from him. Also, it really helped having Michael Olise on the bench, ready to come on and make an impact. He came on and had some lovely touches. There was a couple of moments where he made an absolute mug of Lewis Hall, which was quite enjoyable. But yeah, having that option of him being on the bench, that massively helped. And also, I think once again this week, we've seen some really good management from Oliver Glasner. The fact that he chose to not risk Eze against Fulham because we've got a little break now before the Man United game. And the fact that he chose not to start Michael Olise against Newcastle off the back of that West Ham game. This is the sort of thing that we want to see from our manager. Obviously, you miss them when they're not on the pitch, but I think the team is performing so well that it's quite clear that it's about the team. It's not just about the individuals. And going back to that game against Newcastle, I thought the fullbacks, or the wingbacks, I should say, were excellent. Both Tyrick Mitchell and Daniel Munoz played with just so much energy. Honestly, the impact they have on the team is ridiculous. I mentioned the midfield two as well, Wharton and Hughes. They were phenomenal. I mean, it's hard to imagine the likes of Jefferson Lerma or even Cheick Doucouré putting in a better performance than this. As a duo, as a pair, they were absolutely outstanding. And then I also just wanted to mention Dean Henderson as well, because obviously he made that mistake against West Ham. And there were a couple of times on Wednesday night where his kicking wasn't the best, but he made a couple of really important saves, one from Isak in the first half, one from Anthony Gordon in the second half. He kept his clean sheet. I don't know, I just thought that was a really good response to a slightly disappointing moment in that game against West Ham.
Yeah, because although Newcastle aren't quite the same beast on the road as they are at St James's Park, to shut out that side who have been, you know, really flowing going forward. Isak's been in top-notch form. Anthony Gordon, as I say, scores loads at home. So to keep them quiet, keep a clean sheet, was that almost as satisfying as anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said earlier, for me, it was about the way we controlled the game. We played with so much energy. Out of possession, we were so good at winning the ball back straight away. And a lot of that did come from Wharton and Hughes. But then in possession as well, we were just sustaining attacks. You know, so many times the ball breaks down, it gets cleared, but Palace came back at them. And that's something that we haven't really seen a lot of in the past. The more I see of Oliver Glasner's Palace, the more I like, because you can see the patterns of play, you can see the things that they've been working on. And yeah, I thought we were really good value for that 2-0 victory.
Right then, kicking off part two, Matt, with the champions, how did it all play out to conclude the WSL Championship season for Crystal Palace Women?
So Palace Women played out a 0-0 draw against Sunderland in front of a record attendance at Selhurst Park. We knew that Palace Women were basically already up. It was going to take something quite ridiculous for Charlton to overtake them. It was going to take us losing by a lot and them winning by a lot. Obviously, it didn't matter in the end because we got the point that we needed anyway. A fantastic day at Selhurst Park. Great to see so many fans in attendance. Great to see Palace Women on the pitch with the trophy. I think it's really important that we mention Laura Kaminsky, who has done a fantastic job. We also need to mention Grace Williams as well, who's come in and sort of overseen the women's side of the club. And then also, I think some of those players and some of those staff members that have gone before. You know, this hasn't been something that's just happened this season. We've been building up to this for quite a while. So I think some of those players that have gone before, someone like Dean Davenport as well, kind of laying these foundations, because it has been a fantastic season. Obviously, it's going to be a season that as a football club, we never forget. But the women's side have been on the rise now for a few years. And I think this is kind of the final step in what's been quite a long process.
Yeah, a truly fantastic achievement. I mean, a Crystal Palace team lifting a trophy in our lifetime. It's been a while, hasn't it? So yeah, massive congratulations to them. I enjoyed all the content of them celebrating on the pitch afterwards. I mean, they've got some lungs on them as a group. They were really going for some of those songs, more so, I think, than maybe even the fans that were still in the stands. My other observation was that Elise Hughes, who of course has had this horrible knee injury, went full John Terry. She was on the pitch in full kit at the end, which I thoroughly rated.
Yeah, obviously that was fantastic to see. A real shame for Elise because she's been such a massive part of the success this season. As I said to you a few days ago, it does seem that there is some kind of Palace promotion curse. Obviously, when the men's team went up, it was Glenn Murray. This time round, it's Elise Hughes. That will be a real blow moving forwards because, let's be honest, she is going to miss a large part of the WSL campaign. But yeah, listen, she's done a fantastic job this year. Great to see her on the pitch celebrating the success as well.
Yeah, Golden Boot winner too. I guess that'll be top of the list for Laura Kaminsky and, as you say, Grace Williams planning for next season, which no doubt they will be starting to think about that very soon. Life in the WSL is going to be a big step up, I guess. And the only real sort of aim that they'll have, I would assume, will be to stay in that division. But they're going to need to replace Elise's goals in the short term.
Yeah, it is a massive step up. But you would like to think that some funds will be there for them to improve the squad. We want the women to be in the WSL, just like we want the men to be in the Premier League. Obviously, the men make a lot of money from being in the Premier League. I'm not saying that all that money should go to the women's side, but I do think that it could possibly help because, you know, we want to try and establish this team in the WSL. So, yeah, listen, it is going to be really tough. I do think, though, there have been a couple of times this season where we've played WSL teams in cup competitions and we've actually run them pretty close. So hopefully we can take a little bit of confidence from that. But the main objective will be to stay up. And to be honest with you, that should be the only objective.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations to them. I hope they really enjoy the celebrations. How about the other teams within the football club, Matt?
Yeah, so it's also been a good weekend for the under-21s and the under-18s. The under-21s went up to Middlesbrough on Friday night and they won 3-2. That result means they've qualified for the playoff stage of PL2. There was a lovely free kick from Justin Deveni and two more goals for Trialist as well. So he's obviously playing out of his skin in order to try and get a contract. A bit like some of the first teamers, may I add. And then, of course, on Saturday, the under-18s beat Aston Villa 1-0 up at Bodymore Heath. Finlay Mardrum got the winner in that one. Villa played the second half with 10 men, but I still think that's a really good win on the road.
Yeah, some of the out-of-contract players in the first team have turned into prime Barcelona over the last week, just in time to get those extensions. But in terms of those guys and their next opponents, the great entertainers, Manchester United. I mean, that comment from Erik ten Hag, if that doesn't, you know, strike you as an odd one, when a manager is perhaps under pressure to maintain the reputation of a once great football club who have got new owners and have got a new drive to take the team back to where it used to be. I mean, yeah, well done, guys. You let Coventry City back in the FA Cup semi-final and almost lost to a championship team. I mean, it wasn't just me that found that quite weird, was it?
No, it wasn't. But as you said, he is doing all he can to try and keep his job. Personally, I did find it very entertaining, the fact that they were 3-0 up at Wembley and Coventry pegged them back to 3-3. Of course, it could have easily been 4-3 had it not been for VAR. But listen, I do agree with some of what Erik ten Hag is saying. I do think they do have some exciting young attacking players. But ultimately, the main reason that they are entertaining is the fact that they let the opposition have so many opportunities on their own goal. Winning games 1-0, 2-0. That's not always entertaining, is it? And that's something they need to get better at. But yeah, listen, I have to say, I'm really looking forward to this game from a Palace perspective. We've got a little break now. Obviously, we had those three games in 6 days. This Man United game isn't until Monday night. And if we play anything like we did against West Ham and Newcastle, I think we're going to give them a really good run for their money.
Yeah, they didn't fancy seeing out the 1-0 win against Burnley, did they? Onana went all kamikaze again and slapped the striker in the face and conceded that penalty, which Amdouni tucked away and they got a point out of it. Yeah, they're just an odd team of late. You know, Bruno Fernandes has been in pretty decent form and has almost single-handedly won them a few games. Maguire has probably been playing all right too, but just the sort of inconsistency, really. You'd never quite know what you're going to get from them. And yeah, they've got some talented players like Hoyland, who had a little bit of a purple patch earlier on the season, but hasn't really done it since. I don't know. It must be quite odd as a Manchester United fan at the moment in this sort of rebuilding phase to quite judge where this team's at. And as a result, I guess we'll go into it feeling confident that if they're not on it, well, you know, run them ragged at Selhurst.
Yeah, and as I said, off the back of those last two home games, I think we should, to be honest with you. I must admit, one matchup that I'm really looking forward to in this game is Kobbie Mainoo v Adam Wharton. Kobbie Mainoo made the last England squad. Listen, I do think he has been impressive for Man United, but I think a lot of it is because ultimately he plays for Man United. If you play for a top six side, there's always going to be more attention. You're always going to get more eyes on you. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Adam Wharton compares to Mainoo, because as we said in part one, from what we've seen of Wharton so far, he looks like an absolute baller. So yeah, I think that's going to be a really interesting matchup.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka coming home as well. One would hope that this will be another occasion where we can get Eze and Elise on the pitch together. Michael, of course, has been quite heavily linked with a move to the new project, the Ineos Group's investment, possibly could involve trying to chase his signature in the summer. So, don't know, maybe he goes into this game with a point to prove. Be nice to see him put them to the sword.
Yeah, it would. And I must admit, if I was Michael Elise, I would be aiming higher than Manchester United. When we were growing up, Manchester United were the pinnacle, but let's be honest, right now they're not. And I think when you look at someone like Michael Elise, you look at the trajectory that his career's on, I would be surprised if he made the move to Man United. But yeah, let's wait and see. As you mentioned, Aaron Wan-Bissaka coming back to Selhurst Park. I think he's going to be slightly confused that Wilfried Zaha isn't there, because every time he came back, he always had a really good duel with Wilfried. So yeah, he might be looking for him. Hopefully he is, and hopefully he takes his eyes off Eze and Elise, because obviously they are going to be the main threat.
Right then, Matt, how are you feeling in terms of a prediction for this one?
I'm a little bit concerned because I'm actually feeling pretty confident. I'm going to go for a 3-1 Palace win under the lights at Selhurst Park. I'm going to go for Jean-Philippe Mateta scoring yet another goal in SC25. Bire Eze getting on the score sheet and a first Palace goal for Adam Wharton.
Oh, now you're making me all nervous. Something feels seriously wrong when we're predicting Palace to beat Manchester United. Obviously, we did it at Old Trafford earlier on in the season. I reckon that this would be the first time we potentially could ever do the double over them in the top flight. That would be something.
Yeah, it would be, especially for people of our generation who grew up surrounded by Man United fans. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, people like Stormzy, we're looking at you, South London, born and bred and supporting Manchester United, and all the away fans that are going to be making the short trip from Surrey to attend the game on Monday night. But anyhow, we'll be back podding after that one. In the meantime, you can follow our thoughts on Twitter or X at TC Palace Pod. We're on Facebook, Team Call Palace. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and on Spotify. And the next Team Call Palace newsletter will be out at the end of the week. So if you haven't yet signed up to that and you would like to, you can email teamcalledpalacepod@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, Palace fans. Have a good week. And you'll hear from us again very soon.